You say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the show. I am Mark Becker, your host, and you are at the Rational Revolution here on Civic Media. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. Hey, we've got a great guest here, but if you missed it last week, if you're a fan of motorsports, we had a really interesting guest. We had Paul Page, who is the voice of the Indianapolis 500, legendary broadcaster for decades. If you want to listen to that, head over to the Civic Media app. It'll take you to the website. We got all the episodes available to download, including this one. And this is a really, really special one for myself, and it's a special one, I think, for the show. I don't even know where to start with this gentleman's resume. So I'm going to introduce him. Everybody knows Governor Tommy Thompson joins us. How are you, sir?
I am absolutely great. And what a fantastic introduction.
Oh, I'm not
and
done.
Let me tell you.
I'm not done.
Let me tell you what a great interviewer you are.
Oh, God.
What a great program. And your name, A Rational Revolution. I love it.
Thank you so much. That's the goal.
Let's get going on the interview. But thank you for having me, and thank you for doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you. You know what's crazy is, you know, I've known you for a while, and you know, in preparation for this, I was looking at, you know, at your resume, what you've done, and so I'm just going to go over it a little bit with our listeners, because I think they deserve to hear this, because I thought I knew a lot about you, but I didn't know. One of the most important things, I mean, you served in the United States military for 10 years. You were a captain in the Wisconsin National Guard. Oh my gosh. And it wasn't an easy time to be in the military at that time.
It was.
So you were a captain of the National Guard and National Guard Reserves for 10 years. You went on, your Juris Doctorate of Law from University of Wisconsin Madison. Go Bucky.
Go Bucky.
You were 25 years old. You were elected to the state assembly. Sworn in when you were 26.
24.
Okay, so at 24, you served. You were sworn in at 25. And you served for 20 years. You were elected as the 42nd governor of the state of Wisconsin. You held that office longer than anyone in history. Only person ever in Wisconsin elected four times. During your tenure, and this is near and dear to my heart because I love trains, you were the chairman of Amtrak, the chairman of the Republican Governors Association, and the National Governors Association. And if that wasn't all, you were appointed the 19th Secretary of Health and Human Services. You spearheaded initiatives like reorganizing Medicare, Medicaid to encourage greater efficiency. You approved over 1,400 state plans.
Well, and on Medicare, Part D, that's my idea.
Yes, I'm right.
Every senior out there that gets drugs, Part D was under my supervision, and I'm the one that got it passed in Congress. George W. Bush said, I want to do something for drugs. You take care of it, Tommy.
Part D is mine. Arguably, that could be, you know, quite honestly, the most important thing, because, you know, prescriptions and seniors, that's vital to their very survival. So, I mean, it's crazy. And you approved over 1,400 state plans, provided health insurance to over 1.8 million lower-income Americans. Mm-hmm. That's huge. And then in the aftermath of 9/11, you strengthened the nation's preparedness for bioterrorism attacks, stockpiled vaccines, invested in public health infrastructure. And then if that wasn't all, back in 2020, the UW system needed help, and they said, hey, Tommy, help us. And you did. I mean, and you served as the head of the UW system while they were in desperate need of help. I mean, the service.
For 2 years.
Yes.
For two years.
Yeah. Right. Service is really in your DNA.
It is. It really is.
You know, and it's remarkable the things that you've done. And I want to ask you, as we kind of start, just about a couple of those. Father, grandpa, husband, what is your favorite title that you've had?
Governor.
Why?
Well, I mean, governor, you know, secretary was a bigger job because encompassed all of the United States and the world, and it's had a budget of multi-billions of dollars, and had over 75,000 employees, and was in every country in the world. So that was great. But to be able to be elected by your peers, by your fellow citizens, yeah, four times, yes, as governor, is truly you know, something that I marvel at, but also I so much appreciate the love and the respect and the friendship I've developed with the people of this great state. I love Wisconsin. I love its citizens. And to be able to have the citizens of Wisconsin say, you can be governor, and then reelect me three more times after that, that to me is the biggest, next to my family, is the biggest accomplishment. And I love the title governor.
I think what one of the things that, you know, people, it endears you to people so much is, you know, I read all of those things that you did. And, you know, you have a doctorate degree. You served in the military. You've had experience and worldly experience like nobody has had. But you're the good old boy from Elroy. And you can take a really complex issue and boil it down and make it make sense to someone who has a high school diploma. You know? And it's never above anyone. You know, and it's something that's what Wisconsin is all about, right?
I think it is, and I thank you for that description, because my father taught me. He says, when I was working for him in the grocery store, he said, "Son, you got two ears and one mouth. Use them in that proportion, and you'll get along."
Yeah.
And he says, "Being an educated man from the university gives you the ability to talk to anybody, anywhere, at any time." So pick your audience and don't think you're better than anybody,
yeah,
and always respect everybody, and always have a smile on your face if you can. And those advice from my mother and father, and I hold them dearly. Two ears and one mouth, yes, and you'll do okay, Tommy.
Well, I think that's how, you know, that propelled you to four elections, and you were elected even when you didn't have the majority in the Assembly and the Senate, and you still got a lot done because you were able to, you never were above anybody, and you're still not. And you really showed respect to everyone, which is awesome. That's why.
When I first got elected governor, Mark, I was the only Republican that won a statewide election from an incumbent Democrat. It was a big Democrat.
Seriously.
Year.
I didn't know that.
And I was the only one that won that year. I believe that's correct. And so, yes, it was always, my belief is you always want to shake hands and look somebody right in the eye and say, "I need you to vote for me. I want to help you, and I want to be your representative." And people in Wisconsin respond to that sincerity, that honesty, and that friendliness. That's Wisconsin. And I love it, and I brag about it all the time. You know, Wisconsin's the greatest state in America, bar none.
That's
people here smile and use common sense and get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love about this great state we call home.
I want to ask you, and this is more for me than anybody, but one of the most transformative events, and probably the most transformative event in my life, you know, in terms of like news and all of that, was September 11th. I remember sitting in Mr. Kyle's biology class when the principal of Green Bay East High School came over the loudspeaker and said, you know, America is under attack. And if the world stopped, it did. And I know what it was like in Green Bay, Wisconsin. My mom, she worked at the church that we went to back in 2012. You went to Church and Alley Resurrection, and I was there. And we went and opened the doors at night on September 11th, and people were waiting outside just because they wanted to go to church and pray. You know, what was that like being in the halls of power that day?
Mark, it's going to take me a little bit.
That's okay. We got time.
Okay. It was absolutely surreal. I had invited scientists from all over the world to come in and talk about developing a one vaccine for all flus.
Oh, wow.
So you wouldn't have to get a flu shot every year. And I had scientists coming in from all over Europe and Asia, and they were here for a meeting with me, and we're going to spend that week coming up, hopefully, with a ubiquitous vaccine to cure all flus. When I had breakfast with them, and I left, and I heard about the first plane hitting the building in New York, North Tower. We sped up to my office. I called everybody in. By that time, we had the TV on. The second tower was hit. And so I knew that I was going to have to act because I knew there was lots of casualties.
Yeah.
You could see it by people jumping out of the windows and fires and everything like this. And so I asked the attorneys if I could declare a health emergency for the country. And they said, nobody's ever done that. And I said, well, I want to do it. Is there any law that says I can? They said, you can't find any law that says you can't. No law says you can. And I said, that doesn't matter. I'm going to do it. And so I said, prepare the order, because I knew I was going to have to act.
Yep.
And so by 9:30, I had an order declaring a national health emergency in America.
Wow.
And we had medical depots where we had hundreds of thousands of medicines and so on. We have 8 of them around the country. After 9/11, I expanded that to 10.
Oh, cool.
They're highly classified.
Yeah.
But as you know, the president or the vice president had declared in the United States Armed Forces and Air Force had declared no planes could get up. I said, I got to have an exemption to get a plane in the sky, and because we had to get tons of medical supplies up to New York. And I think we might have been the only outside agency outside the Air Force that got a plane in the air that day. And we delivered, I think, 50 tons of medical supplies to New York by 5 o'clock that day. And
I'm going to stop you right there. We're up against a break, and I want to continue this discussion on the other side. We got Tommy Thompson.
Okay.
We're talking about his experience as secretary on 9/11. This is fascinating, and you're going to want to hear the rest of this story. So we'll see you on the other side. And thank you very much for listening to Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker, your host. We're talking with Governor Tommy Thompson. He was talking about how on 9/11, you hear the narrative that all of the planes in the United States had to be grounded, but you were talking about how you were able to get a plane in the air with some medical supplies up to New York. Continue that. I'm sorry.
Well, no, that's quite all right. And we got 50 tons of medical supplies. Masks, gloves, different types of medicines up to New York, and it was amazing because that's what they needed. And then all the cabinet secretaries were ordered, except for Secretary of State and Department of Defense, were ordered to go on helicopters out of Washington, D.C., ordered by the Vice President Dick Cheney, because the president was in Florida and had not gotten back to Washington. And so I didn't want to go, and they forced me to go. But I told my security to pick me up, go out to Virginia, where there's a city in the mountains for the continuation of government. And everybody went out there, and
you
I
went
walked
there.
Out.
No kidding.
After I walked out and got in my security car, unbeknownst to anybody, and came back to the office, was back in my office at 4:45. And then I met the people and I told them that I was going to be there at 5 o'clock in the morning if anybody wanted to come back to work, because nobody had to. But I said, I really need you, and I'll be here to welcome you. I was there at 5 o'clock, shook hands. Hundreds of people came back to work at my request. And then we decided that we had to go up to New York, and I was first secretary.
Yep.
I was up there before the president got up there. I went up to New York on Amtrak. Beautiful day outside, but when I got there, you could hardly, we walked down. I walked down with the chief of police, the fire chief, and the governor, and Rudy Giuliani was the mayor. And we walked down to one of the things, what struck me in New York is everybody, the stop and go lights were knocked out.
Yep.
Nobody honked a horn.
Oh,
everybody
no
was so deaf. In New York, nobody honked a horn. Nobody smiled. And it let people go through. They were all good soldiers and good Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. They let people go through the lines, and they took their turn. And nobody said anything. Nobody honked a horn. It was all business. And everybody went down there, and I met with the people that were down there, and that was when they found the last live person. And I didn't get a chance to meet them. But then I went over to the hospitals and met with the doctors, met with some people that were injured, and then went out to where the morgue was. And it was just a ghastly thing to see all this terrible carnage. But the truth of the matter was, it was surreal. It was a bright sunny day, but there was so much debris flying down.
Oh, yeah.
And I was up there walking the streets of New York, but everybody was friendly, but nobody was smiling. Everybody was serious, and everybody was American. Went back to Washington, D.C., and that night everybody got together outside of the Humphrey Building where I had my office, holding hands and with candlelights, singing, you know, different songs. Proclaiming how great it is to be an American. It was a type of thing, you know, didn't know what was going to happen next, but you knew we were united, we were together. There was no Democrat or Republican or independent. Everybody, we were all Americans. And to be in New York and have nobody honk their horn to this day amazes me. But that was the feeling of the time. We were there to be polite, be direct, businesslike, and everybody came in to help out.
That's awesome.
And I was the first secretary to go up and visit, and I still remember how appreciative the governor and the mayor were that I was there and go over to the hospitals and help out with the doctors. It was unreal, but it was America.
Yeah. That's awesome. We're talking with Governor Tommy Thompson, and I want to pivot a little bit. You know, because we're going through, you know, you said it was surreal. We are kind of going through a little bit of a surreal time right now. And I want to talk. I want to talk about the conversation that's going on in the Democratic Party. I would imagine, you know, Joe Biden. We got about 3 minutes here.
But, I know Joe Biden very well. I worked with him when I was secretary, and I knew him when I was governor.
Yeah. What's going on in the Democratic Party? Where are they today? You know, I just want your thoughts on the whole state of play there.
I have said for well over a year that Joe Biden will not be the nominee. And I still don't believe he'll be the nominee.
I don't either.
I think that, and I've been saying it for a year. I know Joe Biden, and I felt sorry for Joe Biden during that debate.
If Joe Biden
was the Joe Biden I knew when I was secretary, he would not, I am fairly confident, would not continue.
That was hard to
say. I was embarrassed, and I was sad to see Joe in that condition.
Yeah.
Because I knew him as a very outgoing, aggressive, and strong person. And I just know that he would say, I'm not fit for the job, and I got it turned down. But right now, I don't think he's completely in control. I think his family is pushing him to stay in, and I think he's more or less acceding to that pressure. But I don't think he's going to remain during the Democrat National Convention.
I don't
There's
think
too
so.
Much opposition.
There's too much, and it's growing, too. And what is the state of the party? I mean, you know, is there room to work with the Democrats right now if you're a Republican?
I think there is. I think right now, Mark, that we have so much polarization, much partisanship in America that I think it's going to get worse, I think, during this election. But I am very optimistic that after this election, no matter what happens, people are going to come together. I think people are just fed up with the partisanship and the polarization and the fact that nothing is getting done. We're a country of doers. America has always been the country that's out there aggressively leading. We're not leading anymore.
Right.
And we got so many internal problems that we're not addressing. And that's not America.
Right.
That's not what we're cut out for. We're supposed to be solving problems. That's what we do as Americans, as Wisconsinites. We solve problems. And we're not doing that. So I think after the election, I am fairly optimistic that we're going to come together as a country and as a state and start working together as Democrats and Republicans. I tell people this thing, Mark. I say, run as a Republican, run as a Democrat, run hard. But once you win, give up being the R's and D's, not completely, but join the W party, the winning party, the Wisconsin party, and work together and get something done. That's what I did as governor. I brought people together and we got things done. Even with Democrats in control of both houses, I was able to get a lot done for the state of Wisconsin because, as President Reagan once said, it's amazing how much you can get done if you don't care who gets the credit.
It's exactly
right. That's what we have to do. We have to get back to that.
I totally agree. We're talking with Governor Tommy Thompson. We talked about the Democratic side. We're going to talk about the Republican side here as the convention rolls into Milwaukee. We're going to talk about what Tommy's going to be doing at the convention. Coming up, you want to hear this? Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. I am your host, Mark Becker. We are talking with Governor and all-around good guy, Tommy Thompson. And we're talking about, you know, what the state of play is. And I love what you said before about coming together. You know, and that's kind of, for me, why I became involved in Republican politics as well. And, you know, I was a chairman of the Republican Party in Brown County, and then I was an elected official myself. But, you know, why I was in the Republican Party was because I believed in some things. Like, I wanted to live in a government. I wanted, you know, if I work really, really hard, I can earn as much as possible for my family. I didn't want the government telling me what to do. You know, I'm a hunter. I have, you know, guns. I think that that's okay. And, you know, for me, some people point to like Ronald Reagan and all of that. But for me, it was George W. Bush and you, Tommy. But at George W. Bush's inauguration, this is like this sentence here was why I was a Republican. And he said, when he was inaugurated, he said, "The grandest of these ideals is an unfolding American promise that everyone belongs, everyone deserves a chance, and that no insignificant person was ever born." And that, to me, was what it meant to be a Republican. And that
still is.
Yes.
The basic credo of being a Republican is take stock of yourself, but also reach out. Everybody has got meaning. Everybody has got self-worth. Everybody has and should have that opportunity because we are in America.
Yeah.
That's what America stands for. Independence, opportunity, limited government. Those are the principles that this country was was set up on. And the Statue of Liberty says, come on in.
Right.
We are Americans and we're independent.
Right. And so we have in Wisconsin, because, you know, it really underscores the importance of the Badger State that we are going to play in the election. Just like, 4 years ago, it was Milwaukee. Obviously, it didn't really happen like it was supposed to on the Democratic side because of COVID. But the Republican convention is next week. And I was, I was surprised to see that you were speaking. So what are you hoping to get out of that?
I just want to be able to tell the convention how important it is to be a Republican, how important it is to be involved in party politics, how important it is to be in Milwaukee, a great city on a great lake, how important it is for the Republicans to win and start steering America towards solving its problems and coming together and bringing people together. And that is what we stand for as Republicans. That's what we stand for as Americans. And that's what we stand for in Wisconsin at this national convention.
So a lot of the state of play in politics right now, we talked about it a little bit, is division and, you know, frustration and all of that. And I don't think, you know, the Republican Party is the same party that it was when I was chairman. And I saw Charlie Sykes in an airport last week, and we kind of talked a little bit about this because he's famously he is a conservative. He still has those ideals, but he's not a Republican, and he does not support the current nominee. What do you say to people who are in that camp?
I say to those individuals that everybody has some failings, but you got to overlook the failings and look to what the accomplishments are and what the assets are. And when you compare the Republicans to the Democrats are floundering, as we indicated. Mm-hmm. And they don't even know who their nominee is at this point in time is going to be. And so they're floundering out there. And we got high inflation, it's an open border, high crime, and high taxation. And it's time for a change. And now the Republican nominee is Donald Trump, whether you like everything about him or not. And the truth of the matter is, the only person that you will ever agree to over 90% of the time is the person that you're looking at when you're shaving in the morning. and it's time to overlook all of what you don't like and look at what you do like and the need to change directions in this country for the better. For stronger foreign relations, we got problems internationally. Do something about the open border. Do something about high inflation and taxation. And get down to it, and the Republican Party is the best party to accomplish that, and the nominee is Donald Trump. Get behind him, and let's get him elected, and let's start a new chapter, a new direction in Wisconsin. That's what I would tell him.
So, and where I could, you know, I've struggled with Donald Trump mightily. And,
yes. You
know, one of my best friends in politics is Reed Ribble, and he will not support. And, you know, because it's a lot of times on this show, I talk about it's not about left versus right. It's about right versus wrong. And,
that's
you know,
and I love you for that. I love you for that.
Same here. That's
the basic credo.
Right.
Do what I used to tell my people this when I was governor. They said, well, that's a Democrat idea. I said, I don't care. It's the right idea. Do it.
Well, and there,
said,
you know,
I don't care who gets credit. Do
right.
what is right, and that's good government. If you
right.
do what's right, it's good government.
Well, I mean, you won Dane County in 1994, and so
I did.
You know, how has politics changed since then? I mean, and where I struggle is, you know, on the Democratic side, you know, you have Joe Biden, who is you can't be taken seriously on a national or worldwide stage when the leader of the free world has an 8 o'clock bedtime. But, you know, right.
I'm sure Putin
right.
and President Xi is going to, I'm going to only attack between 12 o'clock and 6
he's
o'clock
trembling in his boots.
Because I don't want to wake up Joe Biden.
Right. Right.
I don't think that's going to happen.
But no. I don't think he's going to be the nominee. So I don't think, but I struggle with the fact that, and I, as a conservative, not everything Donald Trump did was bad. He did a lot of good things. He did.
Right.
But
yeah.
I think what came with it was, you know, the other side of when Donald Trump was president, my wife is a black woman. Hate crimes rose.
Yes.
My brother is gay. Bigotry and hate crimes against gay people rose because so often there was, you know, right or wrong or indifferent, there was a space that was created to say, hey, like in Charlottesville, there's decent people on both sides of this. Well, one side is Nazis and the other side is not Nazis. So there's not decent people on both sides. But that was the message that was sent from Donald Trump. And so it's so hard. And then we get into the election. And I would imagine you believe that it was not a stolen thing. But
I don't believe. I think the election was conducted correctly.
Right. And so that message destroyed so much of the foundation of public trust in institutions. And I mean, what happened was terrible. And so that's someone for me, you know, I and people that listen to this show, this is a purple audience. How do we tell someone who is purple, you know, that in spite of everything that happened, in spite of, you know, wanting to sidestep the Constitution and January 6th and all of those things, why should we give this person another chance to do that?
It's a balancing thing. We know that no matter who the Democrat nominee is going to be, it's going to be a tug way to the left. We've tried the left policy stuff, and they are not working. It's time to try a more conservative approach. As you've indicated, you're conservative, and so am I.
Yep.
And I believe very much in those principles. I live by them, and I govern by them. And I accomplished a great deal, I think.
Oh, yeah.
With the help of Democrats on a bipartisan basis.
Right.
We're going to get back to that. But I think you have to have a president, and you have to choose between somebody more on the left versus somebody on the right. The people on the left, I think, have failed America and Americans. And I think it's time to try a more conservative approach. And Donald Trump is the standard bearer. So you have three choices. Vote for a Democrat, which I would advise you not to and hope you don't. Or not vote, which I certainly do not think as Americans
you can avoid the opportunity. Right.
And so the third choice and the best choice is being a Republican and vote for Donald Trump. I don't think that's hard to rationalize.
And that's why
I think all of us have got to get behind. We want a new direction in America, and there's only one choice for a new direction, and that happens to be the Republican way, and that nominee is Trump.
We're talking with Governor Tommy Thompson, and I appreciate that. And it's funny you talk to there's a guy that I'm in the car business. I own a dealership. And there's a guy that owns, you know, hundreds of car dealerships in Wisconsin. I'm not going to mention his name, but he always says, if you want to know, he always says, if you want to know how the economy is doing, walk into a car dealership. And he's right, because we see people struggling with interest rates and inflation and all that.
Right.
And so we see, oh, the economy is going nuts. It's like, let's see how it's working for people on Main Street. And I think you're right. But I think, like, so often the Republican Party, I don't want to mince words. There are fantastic Republicans out there. There really are. And there are brilliant people out there that have ideas on the conservative side of how to fix these things. But, you know, it's, and that's why it's so frustrating with the party, is it's time for a new direction. We've had that direction. And from the economy standpoint, it went great. Donald Trump on the economy was wonderful. But on the other stuff, I never experienced a time, because I wasn't around for the civil rights era, but I didn't experience a time of such deep-seated division like I experienced under Donald Trump. Who does he have in his sphere that can help with that side?
I think that he's going to bring out a whole new cadre of young thinkers. It's going to be his last chance, and he wants to make this country as strong as it possibly can be. And he's going to bring in people that are like-minded, that want to change America for the better. I am confident that uh, I am confident that Donald Trump is going to pick the right people for these positions to help him steer a better America, better economically and stronger internally, domestically, and internationally.
What makes you confident about that?
I feel very comfortable. And you being a car dealer,
yep.
You also know that it's not only walking into a car dealer if you know how the economy is doing. You also remember it was not only the economy, but after Joe Biden got president, the supply chain for cars was almost non-existent.
Man, the chips and everything.
You couldn't buy a new car if you wanted to. You had to wait 6 months. And then you had to pay exactly. There was no more negotiating, right? Because there were no alternatives. And that is not America. We love choices. We mm-hmm. love to negotiate. We love to dicker and back and forth. And that was not capable. Not only right. in cars, but right now we see it in medicines. And what are the basic things that Americans look for? It's better health care. If you can't get your drugs because of trade policies and because of direction and trade is broken, that's going to affect all of us. And these are the kind of things that I am confident that Donald Trump will fix with the right people in office.
I got about 20 seconds here. Quick question. Yeah, we talk about the border and all of that. How does Trump fix that? 20 seconds.
Fixes he reinstates the policy that was working when he got defeated.
All right. Awesome. Tommy Thompson, Governor of Wisconsin, thank you so very much for your time today. Really appreciate it. I wish you nothing but the best, and I hope to keep in touch and hope to see you really, really soon. And thank you for everything that you've done. You're a wonderful person. Thank you so much.
My honor to be interviewed by you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stick around on the Rational Revolution. I got some thoughts on this discussion as well as the Republican Party as a whole coming up. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. You got Mark Becker. We just had a conversation with Governor Tommy Thompson, and I do want to thank him genuinely for his time. I think he's a wonderful man, and he's really lived a life of service that we can all be grateful for. Some of the things that I want to reflect on that. We talked a little bit about bringing Donald Trump back in and fix medicine and all of this stuff. And I have a hard time with that and giving the keys to the nation's healthcare system to someone who wanted us to take hydroxychloroquine and horse paste and all of these different things during the pandemic, when the very simple answer was listening to experts and medical doctors, not, a real estate guy. And I think, there's so much that we have to reflect on in terms of what we're going to decide in November. And, as a former Republican myself, I reflected a lot on, what I was going to say here today. I want to give the microphone to people on this show because it is a purple show. It is Rational Revolution. We want to hear all sorts of different sides to things. But at the end of the day, we want to talk about what's right versus what's wrong, not left and right. And, I wanted to boil down exactly what happened to the Republican Party and where things went wrong and all of that stuff. And I started in 2012, and in 16, excuse me, where Donald Trump came down the escalator and his first speech said other, rapists and murderers, and some of them are good people, referring to Hispanic immigrants. And it was like a week after I was on a podcast, and I infamously, I guess, said Donald Trump will never be the nominee. No way. Nope. No, I was being interviewed. No, he's not going to be that. Well, he was. And, but people don't remember. Maybe they do. But the Never Trump movement came out of Wisconsin. And I remember standing in that room with representatives from the state assembly and Senate, talk show hosts on the radio, some insignificant guy from Brown County. And we said, we will never vote. We will never support. We will never get behind Donald Trump. And it even got to the point, so my nominee, and I was going to talk to Governor Thompson about this, because we supported the same guy. It was John Kasich. And we supported John Kasich in the primary because he was a good and decent man. He has a heart of service, and he was from a blue Midwestern state that knows how to get along with people. And John Kasich dropped out. And I'm not proud to say this, but I eventually even got to supporting Ted Cruz. I supported Ted Cruz. And I supported him for president because it was either that guy or Donald Trump. And Trump won the nomination. And I opened my eyes, and everybody that was in that room with us, that Never Trump room, other than a few people, were gone. And they kissed the ring, and they supported Donald Trump. And he got 4 years. And they supported Donald Trump through racist policies. They supported Donald Trump through cozying up to horrible world leaders, Vladimir Putin, Kim Jong-un. They supported him through leaving the Paris Climate Accord and threatening to withdraw and leave the UN. They supported him through his response to Charlottesville. We talked about that a little bit. You know, on one side, there's Nazis. On the other side, there's not Nazis. And there were still good people on both sides of the aisle. And that's why, famously, Joe Biden says he got into the race. And then there was January 6th. And I want to talk about that now. I talked a little bit about, you know, why, you know, I wanted to be a Republican, and it was because of equality, because of, you know, that there was always a place for someone like me who didn't believe in everything the Republican Party believed, but hey, we'll get there. But then the election happened, and everything that I thought the Republican Party stood for honesty, truth, justice, all of that was completely out the window and gone. And what we had was people like Rudy Giuliani waving these signed affidavits in the front of a courtroom, in front of all the cameras, going into the courtroom, then where he's under oath, saying to the judges, oh, well, you know, these really aren't all that, you know, whatever. Then he comes back out of the courtroom and waves the same thing, saying, I did this, I showed them, I showed the world that this was a stolen election. And so all of this boiled up to January 6th. And I'm going to share something. There was a DC police officer that bought a car from us. It was his partner passed away, and we had a vehicle that it was like his. And so he flew in, bought the car, and we talked for like 4 hours when he was here. And we talked about January 6th, but I never asked him this question. And I asked him yesterday, last night, when I was preparing for this episode, I said, who was responsible for January 6th? And this is what he said. He said, I personally don't get involved with politics and never entertained the idea of doing so. However, being there firsthand on that day, I will never forget it. I will never forget literally the next day a member of our platoon committed suicide. I started to entertain the idea myself. I have little care for politics. I am a firm believer that Donald Trump incited the riot and made absolutely no efforts to stop it. You do not support our police and support that person. You do not support our military and support that person. You do not love our country and support that person. And you don't love our country and support the person who does all of those things. You cannot do it. Donald Trump tried to overthrow a free and fair election, overthrow democracy. And the stories that are coming out to this day about what happened that day is mind-blowing. And I wish I had a little more time to ask Governor Thompson this. How do you support someone who did that? How do you truly support? He said it himself 5 minutes ago, that he believes the election was free and fair. If you believe that, how do you reconcile with the fact that the standard bearer for your party that is going to be coronated next week is the person who tried to upend the very democracy you swore an oath to protect and defend. He talked about how it was under direct attack, and he gave a very moving story about what happened on 9/11. How do you reconcile with the person trying to overthrow the very foundation of our government? And that is the standard bearer of the Republican Party. And that is something that I cannot get behind. I will not get behind. And that's where we are. Thank you for joining us on The Rational Revolution. I am Mark Becker. We will see you next week. We got a great guest. Stick around for it next week. Thanks, guys.